everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet. Every month we've got articles on writing and the writing life. I write an essay two or three times a month for the editor's blog there. I talk about the intersection of creativity and spirituality. But we also have video interviews with best-selling award-winning authors across the genres. Well, right now, really fun interview I did with a guy named Bruce Van Dusen. He has been directing television commercials for 45 years, long time since he was a young guy. And he's written a memoir called 60 Stories About 30 Seconds. And it's a lot of fun and it's fascinating. We had a great conversation about working in that very unusual field, the emotional challenges of it, the mistaken ideas about it, and then what it's like to write a memoir about it. Really interesting, great conversation. It's up live now at authormagazine.org. Go check it out. And we're funded, by the great people over at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. They're still doing it. And like a lot of folks, they're going to be doing the conference virtually, their yearly conference coming up in 3 weeks this month. Today's September 1st as I record this, as I do this live. So in 3 weeks, it's going to be up and it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. I don't know if I'm going to be there. I've got another conference I'm doing simultaneously also live. If you're going to the Alaska Writers Conference, look for me virtually. But it's a great conference the PNWA puts on. And you can attend from anywhere this year. It's the upside of it. So if you want to learn about that, go over to pnwa.org and sign up. I believe there's still room. I believe there is. Yes, indeed. So how are you doing, everybody? How are you doing? Hanging in there, September? It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Yes, it is. So I'm looking forward to talking to today's guest, Rhea Fry. She's an award-winning author of several nonfiction books and also the novels Not Her Daughter, Because You're Mine, and most recently, very engaging book, Until I Find You. And she's also the founder and CEO of WriteWay, which teaches writers about the business of publishing, and not just the craft. And she's here with us right now. Rhea, how you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm doing really good, actually. Thanks for asking. And so, Rhea, let's find out about you, you interesting person. You've got a bunch of different things going on, and you've got three suspense novels. This is number three. Until I Find You came out.
Number three.
Right. So that came out in August, and
yes.
But you also have written these nonfiction books, which are sort of on health and fitness, and well, not all of them. But you have Cheat Sheet. About cheating men. They cheat on you sometimes. And also a woman's ring. So your nonfiction books, health and lifestyle and sort of the self-help general category, is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. I wrote them before I really understood what having an author platform means.
Oh.
So I found that I could write the books and get those out, but I really did not understand the business of publishing and what it took to market a book. And so the sales reflected that. But I mean, it was such a great experience to kind of go through that and see how the publishing industry has really changed even over the last decade or so since those books came out.
Right. Well, okay. Well, let's just back up. So you've got obviously writing very important to you. And was this always the case when you were a young squirt? Were you interested in writing?
I was. I didn't really think about it as a potential career. I actually wanted to be an Olympic gymnast. I was a gymnast for 13 years.
Wow. Can I tell you?
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt you briefly, but. I go on the authors' websites as I do, part of my very minimal research before I do these things. And I thought, this woman feels like she's got the athlete thing happening in her somewhere.
That's so funny.
Snipped that off of you. Okay, so you thought
you
were going to be a...
Well, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense. That's intense, Rhea.
It's very intense. I was a competitive boxer as well for about 5 years and a personal trainer for about 15 years and CrossFit and, you know, just have always been in the health and wellness arena. But I really always loved journaling and letter writing. My father is a phenomenal writer and really introduced me to, you know, the love of words at a young age, poetry. He taught me to read from the TV guide. Do you remember the TV guide that we used to get back in the day? That's how I learned to read, which was great.
Wow.
So it was kind of always with me. And then when I visited Columbia College, actually in Chicago, they had a really cool creative writing program. And I just kind of fell in love with it and really always wanted to write novels. But I actually started off as a journalism major and got very involved in some death row cases. I've been a journalist on several death row cases and worked on innocence projects and have always been interested in true crime, and which kind of led me to writing suspense. But I really, you know, I wrote a really crappy novel that came out when I was 22, which I don't talk about. I pretend that just didn't happen and didn't exist. But
you got it out.
I got it out. I mean, it was a sketchy publisher. It wasn't a great deal. I learned a lot of lessons on what not to do. But then I really abandoned fiction for 10 years, became very entrenched in nonfiction and writing for magazines and newspapers and different companies. And then, you know, in late 2016, I got an idea for this book while standing in an airport. And I was working three jobs at the time. I went home. Two of those jobs, which was super irresponsible, but I said, you know, if I don't write this now, I'm never going to write it. And I wrote the book in a month and got a two-book deal and a movie deal and everything kind of started. Yeah, it was crazy, but it sounds crazy, but it was such a long, laborious process to get there. And it really took kind of the long way around to finally do what I wanted to be doing.
Right. But so that's interesting. So that was 2016. That was just yesterday. And so you,
I know.
I was very much into sports. I never had real sights on doing it professionally, but it was important to me when I was a young person. And there is a frame of mind necessary to do that, you know, to the way you have to focus, the way you have to kind of work out and train, whether you feel like it or not. And goal-oriented. But I will say, and it was very helpful in a lot of ways, but there is also, I feel that in my creative life, I've had to, it's a struggle because I can't always put that athlete's mindset to writing, because there is a very, there's such a kind of receptive nature to writing where you kind of have to let the ideas come to you. You can't just go out and chop wood. That the whole idea of winning, I have to put that aside. For me, I have to put that aside because there kind of is no winning with creativity. There's just the doing. Does that make sense?
Completely. 100%. I mean, that's kind of how I approach it. And it was so interesting because I've just always I love writing nonfiction. The bulk of my business, you know, kind of circulates around nonfiction, but I love novels and that creativity that comes with it. And I found when I was writing my first book, you know, I didn't really have a plan B, but I also didn't have a deadline or expectation from a publisher. So that was the most fun I've ever had writing anything. And then since then, it's been a book a year. You know, there are very strict deadlines. There are definite expectations. And I find that the creativity has changed quite a bit. And I actually love, the time I love the most is not on the page. It's when I'm taking a walk and just processing the information and giving myself space. That's the most constructive writing time I find in my daily life, which is interesting.
Interesting. So let's talk about this. So, is not her daughter? Is that the book that came to you in a hot flash?
Yes, it was just kind of Yeah, that and that came out, you know, I ended up getting a book deal, I think early 2017. It's all kind of a blur, okay. But then it didn't come out until end of August 2018.
Okay.
And
all
now
right.
We're on book three right. in 2020, which is crazy.
So you do all right, so boom. So you're doing one a year. So you go from 0 to 100. But that
yeah.
first book, that book comes to you, bang, you're standing in line, you get it, you gotta do
yep.
it, you quit the jobs, and then you download that book in a month, you know, and that can happen. But that's, you know, that's that real struck by lightning kind of creativity.
Yes.
But then your publisher says to you, great, give me one a year. And that's
yep.
a different relationship to creativity where it's you can't – it's to sort of put yourself into the frame of mind to be inspired as opposed to it just coming to you because you weren't paying attention. And so was that hard for you coming up, finding
oh, yeah.
an idea that you want to tell? It was. Okay. So talk to
yeah,
me about that.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so initially I actually sold a 2-book deal and had no idea what the second book was going to be. I mean, I was so invested
right.
in this first idea. And so we, you know, rather than being struck by lightning, it was kind of like building a plane in the sky, coming up like, oh, what about
yeah.
this idea and this idea? And I would workshop things with my editor and agent. And, you know, finally came up with my second book, Because You're Mine. And, you know, the third book came out. Edits are due for my fourth book in just a few weeks. So it's been a very different process. This fourth book has been the most similar to the first book where I felt really inspired and really creative. But I'm talking to so many authors right now who are having such a hard time during quarantine and COVID,
oh.
like even having the energy or space to be
right.
creative.
Right.
You know, you're trapped with your family and your children
yeah.
and can't get away.
yeah. Well, they, you know what it is? They won't leave you. See, you're
they
a writer.
Will not leave
Normally,
you.
They leave and you
yeah,
stay home.
They do. I know.
But they don't.
Like, okay, I'm done. I'm out of here. Like, I've got to go. It's just, you know, you do need that space. And I think, you know, a lot of us are lacking it. And if you're a creative person or you're used to having alone time, it's definitely been a challenge.
Well, I will tell you. So it was my wife works at home too. She's a writer, artist. And so we both knew this is what we've been doing. So COVID wasn't that big a deal.
Sure.
But for a lot of people it is. For a lot of people it is because I have sons, but they're grown and one is living with us, but he's grown. So it's not the big deal. But, you know, I know you work with clients. I work with clients too.
I do.
And one of the things I have to help some of them with, whether and almost always it's women, is being able to close the door and say no to people, say I'm working,
yes.
especially if they, because they're so used to being there to help people, especially if they have children and it's so part of their identity
yeah.
that's really tough for them. Not so hard for men. We can do that. But for women, I think it's true. But have you found that with your clients also?
Oh yeah. I mean, and I have a very mixed, you know, bag of men and women, but yeah, I mean, I feel like women, especially today, it's like we do it all. We can multitask.
Yeah.
We take so much onto our plates. And when you can't have an escape of any sort, it's definitely challenging. But I'm all about boundaries and giving
yeah.
yourself space, even if it's in your own home. So that's, you know, one thing I do work with my clients on and setting that time, that undistracted time, locking the door, putting your phone in a drawer, you know, not having any notifications and just giving yourself creative time, even if it's not writing, but listening
right.
to music, journaling, thinking, crying, whatever
yep.
it might be. But just, yeah, blocking off that time for yourself.
Oh, it's critical. You know, I mean, I've been doing it my whole life. You know, so I just never
mm-hmm.
think about it. But when I started taking on clients, I realized what a different frame of mind that is. So many people, if they're adults, are used to going to a job or having people to take care of or something. But the close the door
yep.
and say, what do I care about? I mean, like I said, I've been doing it my whole life, so I just think it would be that hard. And I realized how emotionally and psychologically challenging that can be to just say, no, this is just for me now.
Exactly. And I've been the same way. I've never worked in an office. I've never worked a typical 9-to-5. I've worked for tons of corporations, but I've always
right.
insisted upon being remote. And people have always remarked like, oh my God, you get so much done. I'm like, yeah, because I'm not in office. I'm not distracted. But now we're distracted at home because there's just, you know, I mean, social media and our phones, and it's just hard to turn all of that off, I think.
Can I tell you a secret? I have not worked in offices
yes.
much either. I mean, my day jobs were in restaurants and stuff, but I worked
yeah.
in an office once, very briefly, Wizards of the Coast, this game company out here. And I went in to work at this office and I thought, my God, most people are just not working. Like they're just sitting around talking. There's so much not working happening here.
You know, they've done studies on that where it's about the same with school. Like we actually homeschooled our daughter for about a year before all of this hit, but it's been proven that, you know, there's like 3 hours of focused work that happens in any given day in an eight hour work day. Same thing at school. The rest of the time we're in transition, we're in meetings, we're distracted.
Yep.
So it's kind of amazing what you can do if you just focus for 1 hour without any other outside influences. Yeah.
So how's it going? So Rhea, you're now a professional novelist. You have your business. I want to talk about Right Way, but you know, you're putting out a book a year. That's it, right? And like you weren't doing that before. I know you had clients and you were doing a lot of other stuff, but this is very different kind of lifestyle. Do you like it? I mean, now that you've been doing it for a few years?
It's so rewarding. I mean, the thing that's the most rewarding is, of course, you know, hearing from readers is the coolest thing ever. And, having people sit around talking about these made up stories. But honestly, just like connecting with other authors, I found the author community to be so unbelievably generous. And the people I've met have been incredible. But I will say in all honesty, because I think a lot of people look at this job with rose-colored glasses and they just want to publish, but it's a hustle. It's a hustle and it's a grind and it's not about writing anymore. It's all about marketing and selling and, you know, building your community. And so I do miss being able to write just for the sake of writing, because I find that now that it's a job and I'm getting paid for it, it's different. Of course it's different. I mean, that happens with anyone, But it's not all like, you know, rainbows and sunshine all the time. It is a job, and I look at it. My book is a product to sell. It's the first thing I teach my clients, that this is a business and your book's a product. So that kind of takes the warm fuzzies away from it a little bit.
All right, so let's talk about that. So when you were doing your nonfiction books, were these self-published or with small publishers?
No.
How are they?
Yeah, they're all traditionally published.
Okay.
Yeah, all mid-sized, one of the big five with the nonfiction books. But again, you know, just not really understanding the power of your community. And Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so you said to me, like, you published them, you didn't really have an understanding of platform.
Right.
These days, it is hard to publish nonfiction books if you can't come with some kind of platform. So, was this before platforms were such a thing?
Yes, this was way before platforms were such a thing. And you know, again, I work primarily with nonfiction authors, and we always talk about the two barriers to entry in the traditional publishing world. It's usually, you know, if your book is in a saturated market like health and wellness or self-help, or if you don't have that author platform. But I think people get confused. They think, it's just how many followers I have, instead of really having a community, an engaged community. And that could be not on social media. That could be, you know, doing conferences or your email subscriber list. So it is more important than ever. But, you know, I see people doing all sorts of things to build that and getting published. So you can definitely do it. It's a little bit more challenging.
But the people who want to work with you, are they – because there's two types of writers, especially in the nonfiction world. There's some who just love to write and are trying to get over the hump of – you know, they want to be writers. And others really are professionals who want to have a book out, you know, want to have a book to go with what they do. And that's a different relationship to writing, I find. Which do you see more of?
I see more of the second. So I see more of people who come to me, and we also do fiction as well. So we're really like a one-stop shop, but I have a lot of clients who come to me who have established brands, they have a business, and they're using a book as a tool to further their business, to get more speaking gigs, paid gigs, because that's really where the money is. And and they're just using it as one arsenal instead of just, you know, writing a memoir and wanting that to be published. So yeah, I really have a lot of business self-development type clients who just need it to legitimize their brand, essentially.
Yeah. And it's a very different way to write when you're doing that, because you just want the product. I mean, they would almost be willing to pay someone to write it for them, I assume.
Oh, yeah, completely. And so that's why people come to me. I create what's called a book proposal, which is what you actually sell instead of writing a nonfiction book. Yeah. So, so I really walk them and coach them through that process. And then I actually pitch to literary agents on their behalf. I have an arsenal of agents, top agents that I just establish relationships with. And so this way you bypass the slush pile. You are getting your work in front of a literary agent. We're getting constructive feedback. And then we can go back and kind of tweak if we need to. And I'm really with those authors or aspiring authors until they get an agent or a book deal. I kind of pride myself on that. So it can be a real long game, but I want people to walk away understanding how the industry works, how to read a contract, what's a good deal, what's not a good deal. And really going in with eyes wide open.
That is impressive. That is impressive.
It's fun.
That sounds great. It's fun. Good. I'm glad it's fun.
it is fun.
Why do it otherwise? I mean, money.
Exactly.
I know, why do it?
No. You know? I say no a lot to people. Like, I'm not in the business of taking money and running. My husband actually, he had a very lovely senior UX designer job and W-2 income and, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he quit his job in January to come be my creative director of this company. What? And then COVID hit. And I'm like, we have lost our minds. We're going to fold. This is never going to work. And then I found it was so amazing. I guess people aren't having the same lack of creativity problem, but we have been getting so many inquiries and so much business from people who are like, you know what? I want to write a book. And if I don't do it now, I literally am never going to do it. So I've actually found this time to be so amazing for people finally doing the thing they say that they want to do.
That's great. So you see, and you're working with your husband. He's your business partner.
He is, and then my daughter's home, and it's just, again, I've threatened to leave my family so many times this year.
That's impressive. You guys must really love each other, because I'll tell you, that would seem to me, that would be a great, I think it was Clint Eastwood who said, if you want to know if you love someone, drive across the country with them. I think that maybe going into business together is the other equivalent of that.
Yeah. I mean, we've been together a decade and so far so good. Like, he's a designer and I'm a writer. So we've worked together on numerous projects we work together really well. And it's so far so good. You know, ask me again in a few months and we'll see if we're all still living and breathing, but you know.
No, this is good. This is good. You guys obviously sound like you're friends, even. It's not just.
We are. We are friends. Very good friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very important. Very important that. That's there. There's my pitch to all you looking for a partner out there. All right. So you've got book number 4, and you've got edits due on that. And let's talk a little bit about Until I Find You. It's a very interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting concept. It's a suspense novel. Our protagonist is a suburban housewife, widowed, losing her vision. Should we give the core problem in the story? I don't know how much you're allowed to, but you feel comfortable giving.
Of course.
You tell our readers, our listeners, what they can expect when they pick this book up.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rebecca Gray is a vision impaired widow. So she's just lost her husband a year ago. She's also lost her mother, and she has a 3-month-old son, Jackson. And, you know, she's tired. She's in the throes of new motherhood. She's becoming kind of paranoid, thinking she's being followed and hearing things. And after a day at the park, hanging with her girlfriends, she actually faints, and a friend takes her home, tucks her into bed, and when she gets up, she hears her son crying from his nursery. And when she walks in there and picks him up, she realizes that it's not her son, it's another baby. But no one in her community will believe her. They think she's all mistaken. They think that she's just paranoid and tired and grieving. And so the whole book is, you know, is she really paranoid, or has her child been swapped? And if so, whose baby does she have? And can she get her son back?
Now, I think it's a fascinating premise and well executed, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Did the Was that the part that came to you first? The what if I'm a young mother and a baby is swapped? What was the part that came to you first in that?
Yeah, so I actually, true story, started having these reoccurring nightmares that I kept hearing my own baby crying, and I would walk into the nursery and pick up this baby, and it wasn't mine. And I kept having it over and over and over again. So
God.
I was like, okay, how can I write this, though? Because, of course, even if you don't have your vision, you know your child, but it would never work if you were sighted. And, you know, I have terrible vision. I've always been afraid of losing my eyesight. And I don't think we see enough. I hate the word disabled, but I don't feel like we see enough disabled protagonists represented in our literature. And, you know, I thought it was so important to kind of write this strong woman who is struggling with vision impairment. And I live 5 minutes from the Tennessee School for the Blind. So I got to go and talk with them and do all sorts of research. And I did my own like sensory deprivation walking around the town that this is set in, and just really talking to a lot of people and realizing that it's actually not a disability. I mean, in some ways you're more attuned to your child and your life. But then I really got interested in how crimes are handled if you're vision impaired, and some of the horror stories about like getting into Lyfts or thinking you're getting into an Uber or a Lyft and it's not, and just some just terrible stories. But yeah, so it started kind of with this nightmare, and then I was like, can I do this? And I'll be honest, like trying to construct a world where you can't see was real challenging. I don't think I thought that through all the way when I went to sit down and write it, but it was still really fun. It was very challenging, kind of definitely took a different set of skills, and I, you know, struggled a lot along the way, but so far the feedback, especially from the vision impaired community, has been super positive. So that's been very nice.
Good. Well, that's great. And so you also deal with grief in it. Well, you've got a couple women. Was that something you had any personal experience with, or did you just have to just be a writer and use your imagination?
Yeah, just be a writer. I mean, thank God. I think I'm a little bit obsessed with losing someone very close to me, because beyond my grandparents, I've never lost, you know, a partner, a parent, a best friend. Right. So I think it's something that we all experience, especially this year. But we don't often talk about it. So I wanted to dive into that a little bit and see, especially with this character who's grieving, but she doesn't really have time to grieve because she is a new mom, and you know, you don't have time to do anything when you're a parent, especially on your own. So it was interesting. It was a deep experience for sure.
Yeah, I remember someone asked John Irving, he had written about someone who had lost a child, I think, and they said, oh, you know, how'd you do that? He said, I'm a writer with an imagination and two sons. He said, in my mind, I lose my children every day.
Yeah. Every day. So, John Irving has a book called Until I Find You, ironically.
Oh, really?
It's so funny. I didn't know that until this came out, and then I started seeing that everywhere. So it's kind of
John Irving wrote you and said, hey, what the hell are you doing? Why are you copying?
I would love a letter from John Irving. Yeah, it'd be great.
Oh, well, all right. So, okay. So I may be sending people your way just because every once in a while I do a certain kind of work, but it's different than what you do. And so I might send people your way, Rhea. But if someone's like, I'm a life coach who's got I want my own, and they want to, where do they find you? What's the best place to find Rhea?
Yeah. So you can go to, I have my author website, of course, reafrey.com, but my company is Right Way, and it's WRITEWAYCO.com. So it's rightwayco.com. They can schedule a free 30-minute book consult with me to talk about fiction or nonfiction. So we are truly a one-stop shop. We do developmental editing, copy editing, proofreading, consulting for both fiction and nonfiction. We do websites if authors need websites, or they self-publish and need covers or swag or whatever.
You're really doing it all.
Well, we're doing a lot. I mean, and we also have a podcast just about the business of publishing, and we're just really passionate about informing clients and empowering them to make the best decisions for themselves, even if that is self-publishing or hybrid publishing. I want everyone to have the right information. So, I mean, I love doing free consults. I love talking to people about their goals and what they want to do next.
Excellent. Okay. So rightwayco.com. Very good. Or
correct.
Or RiaFry.com. Do you do book? Do you do like Zoom book group meet? Would you be willing to do something like that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I do. I live on Zoom, especially this year. But yes, I do all the things. I can do book clubs and groups and meetings, consults, whatever anyone needs.
Right. Excellent. Okay. One more question for you, Ria.
Yes.
What I want you to do is finish this sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
I said it before, but I will say it again. It is a business, and you got to learn everything about it in order to succeed. And I really believe that. I mean, writing is so fantastic, but it is a business at the end of the day.
It is. It's true. It's true, people. Ria, thank you so much. You're awesome.
Thank you.
The book is very good. Best of luck with it and all the others to follow.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Yes, people, it is a business. It's true. It's true. It's a good business, but that's what it is. You are selling something to people and they are happy to buy it if they love it. Yes, they are. Listen, I'm going to be back again next week with yet another guest. Until then, I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my man, my friend. And to the rest of you, go find something you love to do and do it.